tuning into Capstone Investment Financial Group's podcast. It's March of 2023. I'm Ryan Turbefill, and I'm here with Lindsay Schimmick. Lindsay, how are you?
I'm good. How are you today?
I'm doing all right. It's a little chilly here in Colorado for March, but I can't complain. So as we noticed, and today as we record this, you know, volatility in the stock market is back, much like 2022. And, you know, in 2022, alternatives in investments, you know, were definitely popular, and they probably will be again this year. So what exactly are alternatives?
Well, alternatives are ones that don't track with the market, or maybe track loosely with the broader stock or bond market. There's quite a variety, and some people have different ideas of what they are.
Yeah, so as we kind of look at them, what are a few good examples that you know, a number of our clients may even have in their accounts?
Probably the most true alternative would be commodities such as gold, corn, wheat. Currencies can be considered an alternative, as well as derivatives, which can get a bit complex. But regardless, they can get a return off of the market. But that is a topic for another day.
Yep. No, it's derivatives definitely can get a return regardless of the market, but definitely get a bit complex. You know, I'd also consider real estate to be an alternative asset class. Some would argue that they do track the stock and the bond market, but with that, I think it can be a good alternative for income reasons or you know, getting some diversified returns. So as we look at that, what areas do a lot of our clients' portfolios have exposure to in the alternative area?
Well, most clients will see that they have a gold fund in their portfolio. The gold fund does a good job of tracking the true price of gold. There's a real estate fund, and then about a year ago, we added back an alternative fund that's a really unique fund, as it has, well, it actually uses six outside advisors for a unique mix of alternative assets. Treasuries and CDs, well, not truly alternative, something that we've been using a lot to get a return regardless of the market. Why don't you tell us more on that?
Yeah, last year was both was hard both in the stock and especially in the bond market. And the bond market was hit especially hard due to, you know, the rates skyrocketed right at the first part of 2022, and they just kept rising throughout the year. You know, that was certainly painful, but now that we are there with higher interest rates, we're seeing some great opportunities in the CDs and treasury arena. And Lindsay, you've been buying a ton of individual treasury bonds and CDs for our clients, and that's kept you busy, hasn't it?
It definitely has. However, it's a great value that we can now provide, and we can buy short-term treasuries and CDs around 5% interest.
Yeah, so when you say, you know, short-term, you know, what do you mean? I mean, there's such a wide variety of maturities of when these CDs and treasuries mature. Like, what do you classify as short-term?
Well, we've been buying them with anywhere from maturity within just a couple of weeks to a couple of years out.
Why aren't we buying further out? Why aren't we buying like 10, 20, 30-year treasuries?
Well, because this is a unique time, and as you like to always talk about, the yield curve right now is actually inverted. So we won't go too crazy into that, because then Ryan will just get way too excited. But a six-month treasury is paying more than a two-year treasury, which is a different situation.
No, for sure. It's strange to think that if you tie your money up for 30 years on a treasury CD, you actually get compensated less for that than for a six-month or 1 year. You know, we decide upon buying, you know, whether a treasury or a CD for a client, you know, we'll kind of look at the rates on that given day to decide kind of between the two. But those are just got to explain that.
All right. Yeah, let's dive deeper into that. So we have access to U.S. Treasuries from about a week out to clear up to 30 years for maturity, and then everything in between. With the CDs, we have access to a large number of banks across the country that have multiple maturities. And then every now and then, we'll see a bank offering that is offering a teaser rate, and we'll jump on that. Also, all the CDs are FDIC insured, like any other bank deposits.
Yeah, on that, you know, I've had quite a few conversations with clients on the risk of treasuries and CDs, and you know, CDs are insured by the FDIC, which stands for the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, which essentially collects fees from the banks to insure the deposits with them in case they were to default. And then ultimately, FDIC was created and backed by the U.S. government. Your treasuries are also issued by the U.S. Treasury Department, aka the government debt, and backed by the U.S. government as well. They're definitely different instruments, but essentially the risk goes back to the same exact place of each other, which is the U.S. government. And, you know, certainly a topic there or kind of thoughts on that. But with that, it is historically the safest kind of place to park your money historically.
Well, and then not only are they a safe place, one of the reasons that we also like the treasuries is they're liquid. We can sell CDs, but it will take a little bit longer. But treasuries, we can literally sell them within seconds when the market is open. So if a client has treasuries, but they need some cash, or that if they have some unexpected cash needs come up, we are able to access that. So this is an attractive option because of that, because of the liquidity of the treasuries.
Yeah, and it seems like we covered the kind of safest part of the CDs and treasury options. Two more things we should touch on are structured notes and CDs as well as private holdings.
Okay, so let's go over structured notes and CDs first. These have been a great option, and the difference is a market-linked or structured CD is backed by the FDIC insurance. Notes, they're going to be backed by the issuer, so say Bank of America or Citigroup. There are two main types. There's going to be an income and a growth note. Income pays a set interest for a set period of time while it's linked to the underlying stock or index while that stock or index is down. So say we buy a two-year, six-month, no-call, 8% coupon tied to the S&P 500 with a 50% principal protection and a 50% coupon barrier.
Wow, that's about as clear as mud. Let's why don't you break all that jargon down that you just said?
I know this is a lot. It's a lot. So as long as the S&P 500 doesn't fall over 50%, the bank is willing to pay you 8% interest for at least 6 months. If the market is up after 6 months, they're going to call it. So basically, you got interest as well as your money back. However, if the market is still down after 2 years, they'll give you the interest and your money back. If the S&P 500 is down more than 50%, though, in 2 years, your principal is going to be at risk, either a portion of it or even all of it. So we definitely will evaluate the risk, but like this is a hedge as it gives income while the market is down.
No, great explanation. You know, market-linked notes and CDs are also tied to a stock or index. So say you have S&P 500 note, which, you know, S&P 500 index is 500 U.S. stocks, and let's say that that note has a 15% cap with 100% principal protection. So let's say, as an example on that note, that the market is up 10% in 2 years, the client gets 10% their money back plus 10% return. If the market's up 20%, the client gets the cap of 15%. So basically, if you're willing to, because these notes, if the market's down in 2 years in this example, you get all your money back. And so because you're protected against the downside in the market, you have to give up a little bit of something, so you give up the upside return. So they're going to cap you at the most you can make is 15%. But the nice thing is, you know, as long as the issuer stays solvent, you know, you get exposure to the stock market without the risk of actually buying the stock market itself.
Yeah, there are so many great options and many more like this with some unique options around them. We like to use these as a complement and as an alternative within some portfolios.
Absolutely. No, and they're definitely kind of a place where you can get either income or some market exposure, as we explained, to clients using these vehicles, as like you said, is kind of a complement within the portfolio that they have. And last but not least, let's talk about some private placement alternatives.
Okay. Well, private placement investments are just that. They're not publicly traded. On a small scale, let's say you have a friend and he owns this hotel in the Springs, and he asks you for $25,000, and for that $25,000, you get to be a 1% owner along with him. So this is a private equity in the hotel that the company isn't traded on stock market, but you still own some of the equity in the hotel. Or let's say he keeps equity, but you loan him $25,000 at 8% interest for 5 years. You don't have any equity, but you are the lender, and this is private credit, as it's not, again, it's not publicly traded as many corporate bonds are.
Well, great example there with the hotel there in Colorado Springs. So, you know, and these can have very nice returns. One of asset classes, they don't bounce around as they're not traded on the stock market, so they don't have that daily fluctuation with the emotions of investors. You know, they can kind of have uncorrelated returns, basically returns that don't match the daily ebbs and flows of the stock or the bond market. So if these are so great, I guess some, what are some of the hurdles? And you know, there's a couple, and you know, first one is that, you know, most private funds have regulations of requirement. An investor has to be an accredited investor, which basically is a net worth of over $1 million, not counting their house, or income over $200,000 for an individual, or $300,000 for a spouse, somebody with a spouse or a partner. You have to reach that accredited status. There's also what we call an accredited light status, where an investor has to at least have a net worth of $250,000 or annual income of at least $70,000. And the reason for that is, you know, the Securities and Exchange Commission basically said that, you know, when a company is publicly traded, it goes through a large vetting process. These private ones don't. And so they want to make sure that the investor has the opportunity, the financial wherewithal, to go through and, you know, hire an attorney, hire a CPA, hire an advisor to kind of do the due diligence and make sure there's no risk there. You know, basically the Securities Exchange Commission are trying to prevent some slick talking salesman from talking a retired person on limited income out of their life savings, which is a great regulation. You know, and I think on that, you know, definitely talk to your advisor, whether it's Lindsay, I, or you know, if you have somebody outside of us, it should be Lindsay or I, but if you do, talk to them on these private placements, as they definitely can, like I said, the due diligence is not as transparent. So definitely check that out. But anyways, the other thing that they are not like publicly traded, you know, stocks or bonds, is that there's lack of liquidity. In that, you know, public stock, if the market's open, you know, we can sell the stock that, you know, when the market's open, we can get you the funds right away. But on private funds, you may only be able to sell the fund, basically get your money out monthly, quarterly, annually, or sometimes even longer than that.
Oh, okay. Well, what are some types that we look for, or that we have some clients that we've consulted on?
Yeah, so, you know, a couple. One, there's one that I won't touch on too much because it probably doesn't reach a lot of the listeners on this podcast, but we advise on a fund called the Rocky Mountain Capital Fund that does have the accredited status, also has a minimum investment, isn't liquid for a while. Again, I won't really go into that. It's probably not applicable to a lot of listeners. It wouldn't be a good fit, but, you know, that's one. You know, another one is a real estate one that we use. Yeah, why don't you go in and kind of talk a little bit on the one of the alternative ones that we do that kind of has a mix of hedge funds within them.
So an alternative that we use in most of our portfolios, it currently acts a bit like a hedge fund, but what's cool about it is it does have daily liquidity and no investor status requirements.
Yeah, so I think that's kind of the one that you talked about early on, right? That they kind of acts like hedge funds, daily liquid, and it does kind of have the ups and downs. But yeah, so what about some of those hedge funds that have the huge minimums of like $2 million and, you know, only available to kind of certain, you know, investors?
Another one in the alternative space with a good track record, it actually owns 30 hedge funds. And many with multi-million-dollar minimums. However, this fund pulls together and buys into and has access to those 30 funds. For this one, we do have a $10,000 limit, but no investor status. However, it is only sellable quarterly.
Yep, and I think that's a definitely unique one there to get into some of those kind of hedge funds and get the diversity within them and kind of avoid those large minimums that some of them have. And lastly, like I just mentioned, there is one that we have used that's a global real estate, diverse mix of real estate kind of sectors throughout the world, $10,000 minimum. You have to be that light investor status that I mentioned, and then you can only tender it, which also means you can only sell it monthly. And so that's kind of another one within that realm of private placements. But again, private placements are definitely unique vehicles there with kind of some unique, I guess, advantages, but also some unique risks and liquidity issues and stuff like that. So definitely consult with your advisor, Lindsay or I, attorney, CPA, to kind of do the due diligence before jumping into any of these. But again, kind of a true alternative source as we're talking about.
All right. Well, I know as exciting as this is, we've probably either bored our listeners to death, or we've filled their head with enough, as we've covered a lot of information here.
I think we're probably the first. We're probably bored of it at this point as we're 16 minutes in.
Yeah. Well, we've worked with a lot of clients on the safest items out there, CDs and treasuries, which give us some options, outside of your emergency fund, which needs to stay at your bank. But we are happy to go over those if you have some extra cash. Those are some safe options.
Yep, no, the CDs and treasuries are great on the safe aspect, and you know, the alternative stuff, definitely feel free to reach out to Lindsay or I, and the CDs, that, and just the general portfolio you have, or other financial planning matters with our financial fingerprint. So again, thank you for your trust in Capstone, and we will talk to you all soon. Thanks for tuning in.
Thanks, everyone.